Thank you, David. It is so good to be with you this morning and to be able to share with you some of the things that we have been experiencing over the last 2 years in the islands. Let me begin by telling you about the Palawan First Childbirth Ceremony. In the Palau First Childbirth Ceremony, it's something they do to remain connected to their past, some of the pictures that you see here. And when a woman has her first baby, she is going to be led up a stairway like this that is built by the men. She's covered in coconut oil and traditional dress. She's given a ceremonial foot washing. And then with her attendants, goes up the staircase. And all of the family and extended family, which amounts to a large number of people, gather around as she makes her journey up to the top. And then finishes the ceremony there at the top of the stairs. And so it's something that's very special to them, something that is very unique. We've never seen it in any other culture or any of the other islands, actually, but only in Palau. And something that is special to them. They regard their ties to their history and regard their connection to the past as very important to them. These things they call customs include the Palawan First Childbirth Ceremony, a wedding ceremony, and a funeral. And it is expected that they're going to give their all to be involved with a custom whenever it's going on. They'll take days off work and maybe a week off work, several times a year if there are customs for them to be attending. And what becomes awkward is sometimes when there is a foreigner who is the employer and a Palawan who is the employee, and the Palawan understands, oh, there's a custom, I have to be off for this amount of time. And the foreign employer does not understand that, so a little bit of a rub takes place there. That's one of the unique qualities of the culture and the unique things that we see regularly. There are some amazing things in the world. In fact, we see that in Mark 2, verse 12, where Jesus heals the roof paralytic, says that the people were amazed. Well, Jesus did many, many amazing things. But brethren, we also see amazing things out in the islands, and that's what we want to share with you this morning. For example, in Palau, the speed limits are 15 miles an hour in a residential zone. It goes up to 20 miles an hour in a business district. But then when you get out on the open road, it goes all the way up to 25 miles an hour. My daughter was riding in the car with my wife, who was doing 45 in a 45, and looking out the window, Nina said, "Mom, slow down, you're going to kill us." Yeah. And so different a little bit, different. It's kind of like a culture shock for us to come back to the U.S. and see the things that you see here. You know, your bread does not spoil if it sits on the counter for a few days, maybe 2 or 3 days. Our bread would do that because it's made locally and there's not the preservatives. You have 20 different kinds of Oreo cookies in the grocery store. Now, I'm not kidding. You go count them. You go count them next time. You'll be amazed how many different kinds there are. We have two. It's a lot simpler, but it's just very different. For those of you who may not know us or may be new to the congregation, this is my family. My wife Tammy, daughter Nina, son Noah, and then youngest son Jack. And we have been in the islands for almost 10 years now, 9.5 years, 5 years in Saipan, and now 4.5 years over in Palau. But you know, brethren, we really have to understand the culture and how the people think. Like with the first childbirth ceremony and their expectation to be off work and the importance of it to them, this is part of their thinking, and it's different from what we know. And that is something that we see in the scriptures as well. Now, the part of the world that we're talking about here is right in this area. Here is Palau. It's right off the coast of the Philippines. Chuuk, where I travel 1 week every 2 or 3 months, is about right here. Hawaii is here, and of course Australia down here. So we are right there in the middle of the Pacific. In Galatians 3, verse 1, Paul talks like the Galatians were maybe a fickle people. They were leaving what they should not have been leaving and doing it very quickly, huh? And so maybe someone who's going to go to Galatia and work with those brethren would have to understand this if it was a real quality of the people. We have to understand the people that we're working with, don't we? And the same is true in the islands. In Titus 1, verse 12, we read it this way: the Cretans are always liars. One of their own had said that. Well, if you were going to to go and work with the people on the island of Crete, well, then that would be something we'd have to understand, isn't it? Or think about Corinth with me, with their temples of prostitution. Well, isn't that different from anything that we know? Don't you know that would affect how we phrase things from the pulpit and maybe how we said things? Now, not the message, but how we say the message. And so we must understand the people in order to be able to bring them to God, in order to be able to be trusted by them and where they're going to feel like someone that you can go to and talk to about these very important spiritual matters. And so understanding the culture is critically important. In Palau, they have their old meeting houses. This is a bai. And it is where the men would meet together in ancient times, and there's still several bais in existence today. But the leaders of the tribes would meet together and decide what they were going to do when this other village attacked them. How would they handle that situation? Would they attack back or make a peace offering or what it would be? And the decisions were made this way. Here is another Palauan custom. It is a funeral. And brethren, in the funerals, again, it's something that lasts for several days. Many of the relatives will come and live in the house of the departed for those days. The host family will supply food for hundreds of people. You know, you go to the store and you see the storage tubs, storage totes. That's what they put the food in. Just mounds of rice and pork or taro, tapioca, other things, that fish, other things that they'll have for just hundreds of people. And the people who come and attend the funeral are all expected to give an amount of money. And if you're a close relative, an amount of money will be assigned to you that you're supposed to give. And there's a man behind a microphone right there, and he is announcing who gave how much money. Yes, that's right. And in this place, the average income is $8,000 a year. And if you were a close relative of a prominent person, your assignment may be $5,000 that you have to give. And you think, well, the money doesn't add up, so how are they going to pay that amount? They will go and get a personal loan in order to make the payment so that their name stays up high and they fulfill their obligation in the society. Very important to them, but very real and very important to them to maintain that status and do what is expected of them. You know, Palau is a country of 21,000 people. And what that creates is a situation where everybody knows what's going on with everybody else all of the time. If you're a private person, stay away from Palau. Because it's kind of like high school. Everybody knows everybody and what's going on, right? Well, that being the case, they know one another and know one another well. And so it's very important to keep their name in the society where it should be so that they can maintain their place. There's no hiding in Palau. There's no ducking out there. And so here you see the funeral. And in this low to moderate family income level funeral, $32,000 was raised. So instead of a life insurance policy, they have the funeral custom. Isn't that interesting? The people take those customs very seriously and it's very dear to their heart. So in this report, we want to share with you some of those amazing things from the islands. Some of them are cultural things, and we'll share with you some of the unique and remarkable things that we see on a daily basis. So let's start by going over to Chuuk. And here in Chuuk, we have two congregations. One of them is here in Epanoop Village, and the other one is around here to Muan, and that's really the Namon area. We have the Namon Church of Christ and the Epanoop Church of Christ. Now, the road goes around the island like this, but it's broken right here. And the person who owns the land right there will not let the road be joined together. They own trees and consider them very valuable. And if you want to lease somebody's land that has what they consider valuable trees on it, then you would pay extra for the trees. And if you want to cut down the trees, then it's going to be even more expensive to do that. Whatever the reasoning is, this gentleman will not let the road connect. And so if you want to go from Epanoop to Nukunop, you're really looking at about a 3-hour trip to go around this small island. The road is incomplete. A lot of it is washed out, and for the majority of the trip, you really need a 4x4 vehicle. One of the unique things about Chuuk is that the people are itinerant, and it really makes our job difficult. We'll baptize in one area, and then they'll move from there to another place. We have two brothers who were here in Epinup who moved to Guam. I'll talk more about that in a few minutes. We had a brother here in the Namon region, and he moved up to this area, up on the mountain. And brethren, it was very difficult for us to go and find him. His name is Frog, and here's Frog's baptism. Frog went under the water two times because the first time his hand was still up a little bit, so we put him in a second time. Brethren, Frog moved up to the hill, up on top of the mountain, up on the north side of the island, and this is a very common occurrence for them to move after we baptize them. So here's what happens. We baptize them in the Namon area, and they're going to be a member of the Namon Church of Christ. And so in between trips, I'm planning, here's what we need to do with Frog. Here's the teaching that needs to happen, and work with his wife and his children in this way so that we can be growing the church and moving him along toward responsibilities in the church where he can become a preacher and maybe getting his wife involved with teaching the children. Just plans, you know. And so then we go back to Namon, and Frog is not there. He's up on the hill. So it takes an hour. We're going to go find him. We're in visitation mode. We're going to go find Frog and strengthen Frog, encourage this new Christian. And so we go up the hill, and it takes an hour to get to the base of the hill. We start to go up the hill, and the hill is a 4x4 vehicle kind of road. It is a road that is on a narrow path, and there's no place to turn around and no place for two cars to pass. We get halfway up the vehicle in a two-wheel drive van, and the vehicle will not make it any further. People walking by on the road say, two-wheel drive vehicles usually don't come on this road. We say, okay, thanks for letting us know. So we stop the vehicle, get out, and walk the rest of the way. And brethren, when we get up to the top of the hill, we do find Frog, which is good. We don't always find the person we're looking for, because who knows where they've gone to, little shack out in the middle of nowhere in the jungle. But we did find Frog, and we went to him. And when we got there, brethren, we've got about 15 minutes to talk to him before it's time to turn around, go back to the truck, get back down the hill, and back down to the Namon area where we're staying, because night is approaching. And in Chuuk, it is not a good idea for foreigners to be out after dark. I need to tell you that I love the Chuukese people. And many of them are my dear friends. There are brethren in the church, and many of them are my dear friends and close to my heart. However, when they get drunk, generally speaking, they are bad drunks. Now, getting drunk, of course, is not good, but some drunks are very calm and peaceable. Others are violent, aren't they? And that's a bad drunk. The Chuukese people are bad drunks. And so one of them, if he's intoxicated, may stand in the middle of the road with a machete and just dare any vehicle or anybody to pass by. We've seen that before. So that's the kind of situation that we're talking about. And it's not good for us as foreigners to be there after dark, to be out after dark. Even with the security of having the brethren with us, that would be a requirement. And even then, still not a good idea. So we try to get back. So we've got 15 minutes after all of that effort to talk to Frog. Well, brethren, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Because here we're spending so much time just getting there, and it's a disadvantage to us. So how can we build the church when the people are always moving? The Lord can build out of nothing. He can speak it into existence, but we can't. We got to have the people there to work with in the churches to grow them, right? Well, they're moving, and so how can we use this to our advantage is what we were thinking about. And brethren, one of the things that we have figured out that we can do is do some church planting. And so up on top of that hill in the 15 minutes that we had, I was talking to Frog and his wife saying, we want to start holding the worship services here. However long you're here, Frog, let's start a church service and we'll get the unleavened bread and the grape juice and we can have that here. So on the next trip, that's the plan. And brethren, we can use their itinerancy, their being spread out across that island to our advantage and start churches in these areas. Bera, as you'll see in her baptism here, is someone that has been attending the Pacific Islands Bible College courses and the other classes that we have on a regular basis for about 2 years. The Chuukese change their minds very slowly. Here's another quality of the culture, a quality of the people. They will change, like you see Bera here, but it takes a long time. One of the teachings that they grow up believing is that they are following both Old and New Testaments, and that Sunday is the Sabbath, and so they should not be working on Sunday. Now, you and I understand that Sunday is not the new Sabbath. The Sabbath was not carried over from the old law, and that we're not under the old law today. However, they think that they are. And on that subject, if you wanted to change the average Chukis person's mind, you would have to go through that Bible lesson maybe 10 times. Very slowly, again and again, answering all the questions, letting them think about it, showing them again and again, and then maybe they're going to start changing their minds. Because, brethren, it's something that they have grown up thinking. It's something they have grown up knowing. And so think about the things that you have grown up knowing, and what would it take to change your mind? You ever have something like that? New evidence comes along, and we think, oh, this is not how I've always understood it to be. And our minds don't change right away, do they? Rarely do they. But here with the Chukis, they do change, but they change slowly. One of the unique things that we've come across is that these are a very poor people. I love them, but they're very, very, very poor people. And Basina, the church meets in her house. And she's in Epanoop Village. Remember I said the boys who were there, some of the men moved to Guam. Well, these two men were our primary leaders in the Epanoop congregation, and they both left to Guam at the same time to pursue a heavy construction machinery certificate. Huh? Well, they moved to Guam and they stayed in Guam, so both of our preachers left at the same time. Well, one of them was Basina's son. His name is Atrico, and Atrico was the breadwinner for the family. They lived together in an extended family kind of situation. And so in a room that's about the same square footage as maybe eight of these pews, front pews right here, about eight of those, that's the size of the house. It's two bedrooms and a living room, and the kitchen is outside. And in that house live about 12 people. And this is normal for them. That's status quo, all right? Not a lot of privacy, but a lot of family, right? So Atrico is the main breadwinner in that family, and he leaves going to Guam. The Chukis change very slowly, so who is going to step up and start bringing in food for the family? Going fishing, they don't have to have a job. If they have a job, then they're going to eat rice too. That's what that means. But without the job, forget the rice, and they're going to eat fish, and whatever they grow locally, and then the main food of Chuuk, which is breadfruit. And you'd have to have a long piece of bamboo and knock the breadfruit out of the tree, carve off the outside of it, boil it or steam it, and then pound it, and that makes the con. They let it sit for a few days, and then they eat that. That's the number one food in Chuuk. So Trico's gone, and there's not enough food for the other 11 people. When Atrico left, he left his four young children, I mean young, from seven years old and down. He left his four young children with his mother, Basina. Basina's husband, Atta, is crippled and not able to help at all, cannot walk, cannot stand up, and cannot walk. So it's on the other young men, Atrico's brothers and brothers-in-law, to begin to take over the job of getting the breadfruit and going fishing, or getting a job and bringing in rice or whatever it be. However, the Chukis change very slowly. Huh? And so, brethren, what they'll do is wait for about 2 or 3 months and not make that change right away, start bringing in the food. They'll wait for 2 or 3 months before they really step into that role and make it happen. In the meantime, the family is going hungry. I mean, literally going hungry. And now you think to yourself, well, why don't they get up and get moving? Those boys, those lazy loafers, they ought to be getting in there and getting the food. I know they should. The Bible teaches they should. We teach them that they should. But they don't, because the Chukis change very slowly. And so during that 2 or 3 month time, the family is really going hungry. Even those boys and the mother and the four sons and the crippled father, very much going hungry. So, Basina comes to me, and Basina has a long face and very quiet. And she says, Joey, I'm very sorry, but we ate the Lord's Supper bread. Yes, brethren. How hungry would you have to be to want and go eat that unleavened bread that's set aside for the church's Lord's Supper? How about that? Well, that's how hungry they were. So, brethren, I could not be hard against Basina. We could not be very stern against her, but we couldn't condone it either, because then it might become a habit. Joey's okay if we do this, so we'll go ahead and eat it every time. And so we said, Basina, please don't do that. Don't let yourself do that. Make these boys get up and get out there and get the food that they need and prepare it ahead of time so the family never gets that hungry. And then we went out and got her some food. There's a quality of the culture. The changing slowly, the understanding where they are financially, where they are with hunger, and that's what we do in the islands. Those are the people that we work with. They are a dear people, and we love them. They are our family. They are our friends. And we're missing them right now. One of the other things that we want to do in Chuuk is to be good stewards. And I mentioned to you that I go there alone. I say we because I don't like to say I all the time. Huh? So, but it's really just me going to Chuuk, and it would not be a good place to take the children and my wife Tammy. And one of the things that we're wanting to do there is to build a campground. And what that means is it's going to be an extension off of a existing building, and it will be screened in with a roof and just concrete posts to hold the screen. The reason for that is so that it's safe from those drunks who may be walking the road that's a little bit close by. But otherwise, we'll have that screened in area, and I can put a tent in there. Brethren, we want to do that because it's expensive to visit Chuuk. You say, I thought it was a poor place. It is. But for you as a foreigner to go in there, it's quite expensive because there are not a lot of foreigners who go. And to have they don't have the infrastructure in order to support tourism in a very good way. So this is just one of the things that we're doing in order to try to stretch the Lord's dollars and to be able to work there in an easier and more comfortable way, just a way that will work better with all things considered. I mentioned to you Pacific Islands Bible College. We do not have a building. We do not have a facility there. We do not have anybody on staff or payroll, anything like that. Rather, what we do is invite teachers to come out from the U.S. and teach for 2 or 3 weeks a college-level course for the islanders. Now, in a place like Chuuk and in Palau, that'll be on about an eighth grade level. It could be higher in Palau, depending on different circumstances. But in Chuuk especially, it'll be an eighth grade or lower level that the college course is taught on. But brethren, they love it. I'm telling you, they love it. The teachers who come pay their own way. And we'll have classes from 7 to 9 p.m. from Monday through Friday for 2 or 3 weeks. So it's a real commitment for them. Something that really takes a good amount of time for them to be involved with. But the church is always strengthened after a PIBC course, and attendance is always up afterwards. Just the stir and the feel is always better after PIBC. So we really love the Pacific Islands Bible College courses. Now, let me move you over to Palau. That was Chuuk. And Palau is not the third world country type situation that Chuuk is. Palau is more modern. It is not as modern as Hawaii, not as modern as Saipan or Guam, but a step down from that. But still, it's a good place and is very much more modern than Chuuk. They still hold those old customs. One of the customs is that if you see an older person at the dock, then that older person is asking for fish. Maybe you're coming in from a fishing trip and you see them there. They're asking for fish. Never would they ask you for something. They'll smile and nod, how are you? But if you see them at the dock, then that means they're hungry, they're out of food, and they want a fish. Brethren, they are prideful. But not in, I don't mean that in an egotistical kind of way, but rather they do not want to have the shame of asking you for something or revealing the fact that maybe they are out of food for whatever reason. And so they're prideful that way. And they hold on to the good manners and the customs very strongly. And so that older person is there at the dock. They're asking for a fish. And your responsibility is to give them some food. And so what if it was a bad fishing trip and I've only got 2 fish, maybe 1 larger fish, and it's the last food for my family and the children are going to go hungry if I don't come home with this? That's a real situation. It's very common for them to just have food for the day, or out of necessity have to go out on the hunt or fishing for food for that time right now. Like there's no food on the table tonight for dinner, so we're going out to find something. And so you've come in and that's the situation, and here's the older person at the dock and it's your last fish, and if you give it away, then the children are going hungry, the wife's going to be upset, and what are we going to do? You're still expected to give that fish. More important in their culture and in their thinking to give that and save face that way, help the one who's asking without saying the words, help the one who's asking, even if it's the last food for your family. Because you know what? The children will be okay. They'll go to bed maybe crying tonight because they're hungry. The wife will be upset because there's not enough food. Everything will be cranky in the house. You know how these things go, huh? That's okay. We'll survive and we'll get through it, but at least we have done our responsibility in the society and taken care of this older person. Another such custom is if you see an older person coming down the road, you're going to step off and let them pass. That's a matter of respect, a matter of honoring their age and their wisdom and their status in the society. They really don't have classes of people, but age kindly is its own classification, and they're going to respect the older people. They would do that, stepping off the road and letting the older person come by, because they're used to the roads from village to village, the trails, rather, from village to village back in the older days, where maybe it wasn't wide enough for two people to pass simultaneously. And, of course, the younger person's going to stop and let the older person go by, then get back on the path and go their way. That respect is important in Palau. Since we were with you last, two typhoons have hit Palau. And the first one wiped out a few villages on the east coast. What you're seeing now is the second typhoon, Typhoon Haiyan, and it completely obliterated the northern island of Kayongol. Nothing was left standing except for a few concrete buildings, and all of those were heavily damaged. The people were evacuated. They were relocated to Koror. And when those people, all the population of Kayongol, moved down to the four islands, the four-island chain connected by bridges, move down to them, and they are expected to move in with family. Now, here's where it's critical that these families understand that the extended family is going to live together. You know, that's changing, though, and they blame us in a lighthearted way, not a bad way, but they say, you foreigners have told us that each nuclear family is to have its own house, its own dwelling place, and so now our younger people are expecting that and trying to do that. But we're used to the extended family situation. So here comes these families. Here come these families from Kayongol moving in to the homes of the families down on the main island chain, and say, well, what if there's not enough room? What if there's not enough beds? Well, I can tell you there's not enough beds and there's not enough room. But you know what they do? They move over and they make room. Maybe they'll sleep on the floor. That'll be okay. What if it's a concrete floor and nothing underneath? It'll be okay. Everybody will survive. You know, you and I can get used to sleeping on the concrete floor. Did you know that? It would take a while, but brethren, we could do it. We could do it. The people may have a pillow and a blanket each, but the most important thing is they're going to take care of the family. They're going to move over and make room for the people. And so that's their thinking and that's their attitude. The Chinese donated a lot of prefab housing, and power and water systems on Kayongol all have to be rebuilt from scratch. They've still not moved back. That was in November of last year. November of last year, and they still have not moved back. Some of the churches in the States here sent funds to help with that, and the Palauan people have been very thankful for that help. You saw some of the pictures of our church building and some of the damage that was done from there as well. Another one of the unique cultural things of the islands is that on Kayongol, no alcohol is allowed. How about that? No alcohol. There's another village up on the main island of Babeldaw, the large island of Babeldaw, rather, where alcohol is not allowed and tobacco is not used. And the people used to think that whenever it rained, oh, someone has broken our tradition, someone has broken our culture, and someone has been drinking or using tobacco in our village, and that's why it's raining. They don't really think that now, but that used to be the case. Another unique aspect of Palau and culture is that door knocking really doesn't work, because you have to have permission in order to go onto somebody's property. There was an ice cream truck that pulled over to my neighbor's house across the street, and all the kids. It's an ice cream truck. We have one in Palau. We're very thankful to have the one. Very important to keep that one truck running, you see. So we have one ice cream truck, and it pulled over to my neighbor's property, and all the kids just come flocking from everywhere. And me too. I've got to hop in my step, and I'm heading across the street to the ice cream truck because I'm going to get some ice cream for me and the kids. And as soon as I get onto the property, about 5 feet onto the property, I see the man who's leaving the ice cream truck and going back to his house. It's his property. And he freezes like this. And brethren, I saw it, and so I froze like this. Something's going on. Something's wrong. And I realized, oh, I'm on his property. And so I said, "Sir, may I come onto your property and go to the ice cream truck?" And he got a big smile on his face. He said, "Yes, you may." That's what he was looking for. What he wanted to know is this foreigner going to respect our ways, respect our customs, or is he just going to barge onto my property without permission? If I had not stopped and made that correction, then he would have gone into his wife and said, these foreigners across the street, they don't know us. They don't know our ways. They need to learn about us. Or someone needs to teach them, and someone needs to tell them how we do and what's rude and what's not rude in our place. But because I caught it, brethren, then he'll go inside and tell his wife, the guy across the street, he knows. We can talk to him. And since then, I've developed a good relationship with Mike. And we're moving, Lord willing, hopefully we're moving toward having Bible studies with Mike. We've had some spiritual discussions. And so that's the kind of thing that, again, is unique there in Palau. So door knocking doesn't work. Can you imagine coming to the edge of the property and the person's inside the house and you say, "Hello, may I come onto your property?" That would be the way. That would be the way if you had not, if they were not expecting you to come over. But it just really doesn't work. So for evangelism, we do something different. And we do a night market at one of the Friday evening markets there in Palau. And we put out DVDs free for them to take and Bibles free for them to take. Brethren, this is unique in Palau. There's not a lot of free things. Everything that's brought in costs more because it's shipped in. So the base cost of the item plus the shipping plus the profit for the salesman, whoever's bringing it in. And things are expensive there. For groceries that you buy here, like the Oreos, it's a third to a half times more the cost in Palau. So a lot of the locals don't eat those foreign items like Oreos, but rather they'll stick with what they can grow locally. And so free things are really hard to come by. And people do a double take. When we have the sign up, they're not convinced by the sign that says free Bibles. Still, they'll ask, "These are free?" Say, "Yes, you can take them." And where we got the Bibles is people like yourself who have Bibles at home that you're not using and the extra ones that have come over the years, ship them to us and then we give them away there. Maybe it has somebody else's name on the cover. That's okay. They don't care. And they're very thankful to get these Bibles. You see how they're crowded around. And this is not the largest of the crowds that we've had of people gathered around, pouring through those Bibles, looking through them, different size print, different translations that we have. We do have some guidance on the translations. But, brethren, they are very excited to get those Bibles. So that's one of the outreach things that we do. Here you see Vilma's baptism. Vilma is one of the members of the church. She's a Filipino who's married to a Palauan. And so she's unique in that she's a Filipino, a foreigner, who's there to stay. Most foreigners are only there for 1 or 2 years on workers' contracts, whether they be Filipino or American or whoever. Here's a picture of the church building. And they're only there for 1 or 2 years, and so the Palauans really don't take the time to get to know those foreigners because they're just going to leave again. Well, now they're getting to know us a little bit because we've been there 4.5 years and they're learning that we're there to stay. We have no thoughts on leaving. And Vilma is a Filipino who's there to stay as well because she's married to a Palauan. One of the things that we've really been working on doing is getting the church out there into the community. Like I mentioned earlier, it's a close-knit community and it's its own country. 21,000 people, it's its own country. We send a group to the Olympics, okay? If you think that you want to increase your odds of getting into the Olympics, come to Palau. You have to live there 4 years before you can qualify, and then, you know, then you can try that track running or whatever you want to do on the Olympic scale. So we're our own country. We're our own country, right? And the people are used to knowing what's going on with everybody. So when they see this church building and the sign, Palau Church of Christ, if they don't know anything about that, and they don't know anything about the people who are working with it, Tammy and myself, brethren, they're not going to get involved. They don't know about it, and so it's hands off, and they're not going to go visit that place because it's the unknown. They're used to knowing everybody. They're used to knowing the details of everybody. And so what we've been doing then is getting as involved into the society as we possibly can, getting into the community. We've joined clubs. I coach soccer. We do a lot of free filming with the Moving Mountains Television, which I'll tell you about in a few minutes. Tammy has gotten involved by holding a weekly play group at the house. Sometimes 30 people, mothers and their young children, come over to our house on Friday mornings and just visit together and talk. There's Palauans, Filipinos, Malaysians, Americans, Slovakians, Germans, Canadians. It just helps Tammy get into the community. And one of the ways that we have seen that that has proven to be working is some of Tammy's Palauan friends are inviting her to go out with them and as they take their young children out. Some of them have canoes and ask Tammy and Jack to join them on a canoe trip. That's the success of getting into the community. And Tammy's doing that. She takes part of any of the walks or runs that take place on the island. It's just a close community. What you're going to see in just a moment is a clip from the No Tobacco Day 2013 walk run that they had. And this is one way that Tammy is getting involved. In Proverbs 22, verse 1, we read that that name is very important. And brethren, that's what we're working on doing. This is a piece of our being successful and growing the church in Palau. When it comes to the membership of the church, here's that No Tobacco Day walk run. When it comes to the membership of the church, brethren, we have people across the board. Some of them shine in being faithful. Others have shown themselves to be in it for the money. Some are lazy and some work very hard. In June, we had a group from the St. Andrews Road Church of Christ come out and help us finish the first floor of the church building. And brethren, what a great blessing it was for us to have that, because when the Palauans look at one of our worship services. When the Palauans look at a church building it's not finished, they think, oh, what's not right about this? What's not done with it? And so even though we built the second floor first up on stilts because we could not build north, south, east, or west because of lot restrictions 4 years ago, brethren, now we have finished that first floor, and it is a great blessing for us in moving the church along. One of our helpers during the construction of this building was Ben Osebek. And Ben is a dear friend of mine, brethren. He's the guy that I can call on to help me no matter what time it is, no matter what the job is. If there's any way possible, he'll be there and help. And we need people like that, right? Well, Ben is a former prisoner. He was in prison for 25 years. And he has been struggling since he got out about 3 years ago with being an alcoholic. He is an alcoholic, and he is trying to overcome that and to defeat it. He's always available. He'll do whatever I ask him to do. Ben will come over and borrow the bush cutter. Bush cutter is their word for a weed eater, huh? And if he can find a job cutting grass, and he'll come over, borrow the church's bush cutter, go do the job and bring it back. And brethren, he always brings it back in good working order. He's a responsible man. He'll do what is before him to do, and he's my friend. I'd bend over backwards for him. Recently, he was over at the house, though, and I was in his car, had my head down in his car getting something, and I smelled alcohol. Now, Ben and I are close enough for me to call him on the carpet and know that I'm not going to ruin the relationship. So I said, Ben, you've been drinking. And he said, no. He was offended, brother. He didn't like me saying that. He didn't like it because he's really trying to overcome this thing. And so he said, no, just like that. And I said, Ben, I smell alcohol. You've been drinking. And he said, no. And he got up in my face like that. Very strong, brother. And I had to back up like this. But there was no alcohol on his breath. Not at all. And I said, well, Ben, I smell alcohol. What's that coming from? So we got our heads down in the car, sniffing around. And it's a hatchback car, so the trunk is open to the rest of the car. And we're looking around, sniffing. And he smelled it, too. And he said, it's the cans. His wife had been collecting aluminum cans. There was a plastic sack in the back of Pepsi cans, Coke cans, Mountain Dew cans, and beer cans. Huh? And that's where the smell was coming from. But he had not been drinking. He had not been drinking. And so we're very thankful to be able to say that he had not, at least that recently, had not fallen prey to that old temptation. But Ben is my guy. We have four men in the church right now. We have four men, and one of them is in politics and is gone half the time. Very reliable when he's there to do anything, but he's gone half the time. Another one is a Filipino man, and they just work when they're told to work. They don't have any choice in the matter, working on that worker's contract, and he's always working on Sunday morning. Another man is a good man, but very, very shy. And he will lead a prayer, but I really have to work closely with him in order to get him to do so. And my fourth guy is Ben. And Ben is the one who's really organizing the worship services of the Palau Church of Christ now that I'm here. Brethren, during this 2.5 months where I'm gone, the church really is in the hands under the leadership of a man who is a struggling alcoholic who's been dry for about 2 months now. Now, that doesn't overly concern me because I know that he's taking it very seriously. In fact, he came to me. There's something I'm going to let play while I finish this story. Because he came to me and said, Joey, I explained the situation to him that he was going to be my guy. And brethren, he's not used to that kind of responsibility. He's not used to having to be depended on like that. And so he said, when I was explaining to him, he got serious and he said, Joey, I will not go to the custom. And brethren, they always go to the custom. They always go. He said, Joey, I will not go to the custom. I will be here every Sunday. And brethren, he's been doing it. I talked to him on the phone, and he's been going and taking care of the responsibility. Sometimes it's him and just a few other people who are there, but still he's doing it. They wanted me to write out the worship services, and brethren, we did so that they can have a guide in doing the worship. But he's doing it, brethren, and this responsibility, we believe, will be very good for my dear friend Ben. Moving Mountains Television is a nonprofit TV station there in Palau that we started. We wanted to do our own TV show, and the cost was just prohibitive. We learned that for a fraction of the price, we could start our own channel. So it's a direct-to-cable. It's not over the air. It's a direct-to-cable connection. It goes out of one of the bedrooms of our house to the cable company and then to all of the cable subscribers there in Palau. It's our channel. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to do anything we want, whatever we want, however we want. We show about 90% of our programming is Bible programs made by the Churches of Christ, World Video Bible School, GBN, Focus Press, others. They just open their doors to us and let us have all the programming, and we have a set schedule. We have a morning children's time. We have a devotional hour. We have different Bible programs that take place. About 10% of the time, we also show community programs like you're seeing now. You may have seen an exercise video up there. My wife recorded that just a couple of months ago. We're giving that out for free if you'd like to have one. It will be, I promise you, one of the only exercise videos that you've ever seen where the participants are modestly dressed. Yes, that's right. And so if you'd like to have a copy of that, just let us know. We'll be happy to do it. We recorded that so that we have some variety in the programming and can also help people to be healthy. Huh? That's a little bit, that is a biblical subject as well. But 90% of the time, it's straight Bible programs. And brethren, we're excited about it. And it is something that is really helping us to reach out to the people of Palau, to get the message out, and also to let the people know who we are, what we're about, and what we're doing. And so we thank you for your help and involvement in our work in the islands, and may the Lord bless you in every way.